I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/Inner Academy.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Grasso with the Indie Spirituals podcast hosted on the Be Here Now network. And my guest today is someone I am incredibly excited to talk with. Her name is Roxanne McDonald. Roxanne, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. Well, the feeling's certainly mutual. So as always, before I jump into the conversation, I want to share with our listeners a little bit about you. So Roxanne McDonald is a writer, workshop facilitator, and coach. After 14 years working on the front lines of addiction, trauma recovery, and gang diversion, Roxanne quit the nonprofit world to dedicate herself to full-time writing and spreading her brand of edgy, playful, often irreverent spirituality and personal development. She launched the Instagram account @spiritual_AF in 2013, which has gone on to gain over 79,000 devoted followers, and I am proudly one of them. In March of 2019, Roxanne and Knock Knock Publishing will release two decks of cards offering hundreds of ways for people to either be grateful AF, and we can swear on this show, so let's just say what it is, grateful as fuck or spiritual as fuck. Roxanne is currently finishing a memoir about her own trauma recovery and battle with addiction. So Roxanne, thanks again for being with me today.
Thank you.
Yeah, so psyched on this. We talked about your Instagram account, and first of all, when I started looking at that, I'm like, oh my gosh, this person's like another me. I love this. You know, you have these incredibly funny like animal videos, and then you have like some edgy, insightful, like spiritual stuff. It's a very lighthearted yet engaging and inspirational, I guess, page to follow. You have everything that I think anyone that is a fan of my work would absolutely love. So first of all, let me say to listeners, if you are not following Roxanne on Instagram, you're highly missing out. If you're checking this out on the Be Here Now webpage, scroll down. There will be a link to Roxanne's Twitter account, or not Twitter, sorry, Instagram. But again, @spiritual_AF. So let's start, Roxanne, as far back as you would like. That's how I usually start these shows. You can begin wherever you want, but I want to know about Roxanne. What was Roxanne like when she was younger, and what led Roxanne to who she is today? What is today? Coincidentally, International Women's Day, I believe, which happy day to you and to all other women listening, even though this will be after the fact. But yeah, so enough out of me. Let's learn about you.
Oh, man. Getting asked that question, it's such a it's a little overwhelming, because when I start talking about little areas of my life, I've had a really weird life. And I know a lot of everyone feels like that. And sure. I think it's true.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, where do I start?
Well, I know you do from like learning about you. I know you. You've experienced a lot. So wherever you want to go with it.
Well, so I think with the work that I did and that I do in the world, the thing for me that I feel like has been a gift and not, I like to choose my words, so I tend to stumble a little bit before I get going.
I appreciate that. That's fine.
So I used to play this game with people called the bad childhood game, where people would be like, well, I was, you know, I was on food stamps, and I'm like, well, I had scurvy. Oh. And like, we would like up each other's ante, and I usually would win, besides this one friend who was sold to mean hippies twice.
Jesus.
So it was a playful game, but it was also pretty ruthless.
Oh, sure.
And so I grew up with like any type of trauma you could have. Okay. And of course, there's people who've had worse childhoods than me. I'm absolutely, totally willing to admit that. But in that realm of like coming from difficulty, like I was actually, my dad kind of accidentally left me in the woods in Alaska as a toddler. Mm. And we were, you know, found and rescued from there, my two brothers and I. And then I grew up with, you know, this story being told that I was abandoned, that I wasn't, my dad didn't love me, and I was sure. not worthy of his love. So my mom was raising me. And I don't need to get into all the trauma, but my mom really, like, you know, she was very mentally ill and very damaged, and got to a point in herself where it was, I mean, her choices got so mixed up in evil that there was really no turning back sure. for her. And so I, you know, I grew up with, in, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, abandonment, you know, violence of all types. And so I have that. And I think with the work I've done, it's this, it's partly amazing in the sense of like what I was given, because when I sit in front of somebody and they have experienced trauma and loss and violence and all these things, it's not that I can go, I get to tell you anything about your experience, but there's this beautiful thing where I, like, it was resonance, where I don't have to tell people that that's stuff I've dealt with. We feel it. We can walk into rooms right. and look at each other and go, I can spot the people who have that, and not because we're all messed up or whatever. But the gift for me, which when I look at my life and go, oh my God, how did this happen? Is that I experienced all this trauma, and then I was also placed into these positions where it's just, I was really given opportunities for healing and health the second I had any agency. So like I was, you know, my mom was running this pedophilia ring, and I was growing up in a neighborhood where Ellen Bass and Laura Davis were writing the Courage to Heal handbooks
yeah.
and doing circles where my friends' moms were in those circles talking about childhood trauma. And then the culture outside of my home was all about talk. So I, from 9 years old, I'd been talking about it. So I had this, both the experience of the trauma and this unheard of culture that got me to be able to have health and well-being, like that I don't think was people were able to have before, because the culture wasn't supporting them. And then, you know, I was drinking and doing drugs before I could remember. I was driving drunk at 9, which is, I love to say
gosh.
That. my cousin, my computer is about to die, of course. So
let's
I
plug
have
her
to
in.
Plug this in.
And like I said, we don't edit. So plug in, keep on chatting. We're good.
Yeah. I don't, but I also am in my neighbor's house, so I don't know where the plug is.
So while you're looking for that, I will let listeners know that poor Roxanne, like right as we're about to do the podcast, I'm like, where is she? Because she's running late, and she lives in a village, as she was explaining to me, in California. And one side of the street, her side, is out of the internet. But the other side, for some reason, does have internet. So she was ambitious enough to just go over to a friend's house who happened to be home, and is allowing her to do the podcast. So I appreciate Roxanne for her resiliency, and her neighbor for helping with that, so we can have this conversation. And how's it looking over there? Do you find a plug?
Yes, and then now I think I got it.
Yay! How do you like that little space filler?
Thank you. That was really good.
You got it. So driving drunk at 9 years old, that is something I have never heard on this show before. So, yeah, please continue.
Well, I mean, my cousins were, I had this group of cousins and we were all just drinking and doing drugs early on. And mm-hmm. I think it's a blessing that I think I would have a lot more emotional and mental issues mm-hmm. if I hadn't been able to check out the way that I did from, sure. I mean, I was 5 and I knew how to pump a keg to not have like the foam on the top. And wow. I would sit cross-legged on the keg at keg parties and drink the whole time and then fill people's cups.
At 5 years old?
Yeah, at 5.
Wow.
Like So I was doing all that. And then my cousins and I would like, they were all, you know, metalheads. And so we would go out and, be partying and then it'd be time to drive home. And their idea was like, well, what are they going to do to a 9-year-old drunk driver? Like there's no jail for that.
It's true.
And so I learned to drive drunk at 9. That being said, I was drinking and doing, you know, doing drugs. I think that there's something too where that's like, I have that story of like, I was smoking weed at 9 and I was running drugs across town at 8 and I was doing all this stuff, but I wasn't that hardcore. Like I wasn't bad. All the people I hung out with were doing way harder drugs and doing way crazier stuff than me. I was a real high bottom in the sense of when I got sober. Like I was mostly really an alcoholic. I hadn't done most of the things that people talk about that I know are consequences of addiction. I had a taste of it. I had a taste of the consequences.
Let me just say really quick, not to interrupt, but I'm so glad to hear that, because so many people often talk about, as I'm sure you've heard, you need to hit a rock bottom, and people picture like the heroin addict strung out under a bridge or the alcoholic passed out in the gutter. But that is not the case. And I tell people that I unfortunately have hit these places and nearly died a number of times, but that was the path that my life took. I love when I hear stories like yours, which unfortunately are somewhat rare to me, but where you don't necessarily hit that bottom. Like you said, you had a high bottom. And that's what I try to tell people, especially the young people that you and I both work with, is that, and I never use scare tactics. Dare never worked for me. I try to let them know, like, look, this is what can happen if you do not, you know, start your healing journey now when you have the opportunity. But you don't have to go to that place. Like, this can be your quote unquote bottom. This can be your churning point. So I just wanted to take a moment to really commend you on that and really emphasize the fact that that's so important, that bottoms don't have to be what most people think they are. So mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And thank you for letting me interject.
Thank you. And that's so much of what I used to do too. I mean, that's that saying of like the bottom is when you stop digging.
Yeah.
And so drop the shovel is like, that's my thing constantly, is every time I'm get any kind of clarity about myself and my behavior, I'm like, could I drop the shovel? Can I just drop it right now? What do I do to let this go? So my bottom was really seeing that I was doing the stuff that the people who are getting the consequences were doing.
Yeah.
And that was me. And I had this moment of clarity where I was actually standing on a street in Santa Cruz it's Mission Street, and it goes up a few blocks and then it turns into Highway 1, and then you follow Highway 1 all the way to San Francisco. And I was standing on a corner after a night of, I woke up face down on a hardwood floor in a metal band's house and crawled out and was like, I'm willing to never have fun again, to not feel like this, to not have the empty feeling. And I went and stood on Mission Street and I looked up Mission Street and I went, do I have to walk all the way to San Francisco to know that this road leads there?
Wow.
And that was, and then I went, no. And then the amazing thing, like growing up in the center of the Courage to Heal movement, was that the first clean and sober high school in the country or world, I don't know, but definitely the country, had been started a couple months before that. And within a month or a few weeks of me getting sober, I was interviewing for that school. And then I was at the school and I went to a clean and sober high school where their focus was about personal development. And I got counseling 5 days a week and individual counseling. And then I had a structure for 2.5 years. And then I went on you know, I left there thinking that I was never going to, I did not want to be a counselor. I never thought I was going to be working in the field at all. And then at 10 years sober, after I'd done all this traveling and I was an auto mechanic and I was like going to do all this other stuff, I hit an emotional bottom and physical bottom where I tell people that I got into working with as a counselor because both of my arms wouldn't work anymore. Like I had intense tendonitis in both my arms because I had been waiting tables and working on cars. And I got to a point where I was working in this this retail store, which are lovely people that own the retail store, but I wanted to die. I was like, I can't stand here and tell rich women that they're not fat all day.
Right.
And that was, you know, and then I saw an ad in the newspaper and I went, well, everything is broken. Why don't I just go back to this place? I know about recovery and I'll just show up. And then it turned into this, you know, incredible journey of being a counselor there and I ended up becoming the director and I started other school or other programs and worked with young people. And it was this absolute passion for me. It still is. It's just 14 years of on the front lines working with young people and the family and the community.
Yeah.
That really shaped me. It shaped who I am and how I live and all the really, really, really wonderful things about me that I really love were illuminated and revealed by being in that position.
I love that. And we're so similar in that regard. I've worked with youth for about 15 years myself. And prior to doing these workshops that I do 3 times a month at a youth mental health and healing facility. It's with young men and women ages 13 to 20 that are, it's a residential and they're there for anything you can imagine, you know, suicide attempts, self-harm, addiction, depression, eating disorders. But prior to that, I got to work as an assistant site director for a before and after school enrichment program, kindergarten through fifth grade, which was awesome. But it was also hard because I don't like the words at risk, but for lack of a better word, that's what they were called. It was very low income, often single parent, at risk areas of communities, kind of ghettoish areas. And that's why I was more passionate. That's where I feel at home. You know, like when I'm in like kind of ghetto areas, I'm like that feels homey to me. And I that work, just like you said, shaped so much of who I was. And then I also got to do one-on-one youth mentoring with young males ages 5 to 18. And that was wonderful. But that was also very difficult, you know, being a mandated reporter, having to actually report things to, here it's DCF, the Department of Children and Family Services. And, you know, again, like seeing bruises and you know, you've dealt with that. It's so hard. Yet, yeah, just like you said, I wouldn't trade any of that. Hence why I still, you know, do that work today. And I'm so lucky to do that. But before we move on, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about. If I remember correctly, did you get sober at 19?
15.
15. Okay. So you got sober at 15, which is amazing. I actually became an addict at 19. So the point, you're 4 years sober. I'm now just starting like a full-blown addiction, you know, it went through the stages, experimenting, regular use, abuse, and addiction. So I didn't go into my first program or my first detox until I was 24. So I had 5 years of everyday alcohol is my drug of choice too, but I was whatever you have, give it to me, like alcohol plus, you know. And I remember even at 24, I was grateful when I came out of that program and I had like 14 months sober and then I ended up relapsing and that became a cycle, unfortunately, for a good part of my life. But even at 24, I remember thinking, wow, I have to be sober the rest of my life. Like, how am I going to have fun? And, you know, that's why I do believe that Just for Today saying is very important. But so getting sober at 15, you know, and I mentioned the demographic I work with now, mostly aside from workshops with adults and I don't know, conferences, is 13 to 20. And something I hear repeatedly is I can't picture, you know, like being sober the rest of my life. And I do my best to tell them, you don't have to picture being sober the rest of your life. Picture being sober today for a couple of days, whatever it is. But if you have that experience, what I'm curious about is what do you say to youth, you know, that are in programs or that are struggling at that age? Like, what do you say?
You know, I do the one day at a time thing.
Yeah.
I think there is something about the two little dogs that got in.
Oh, yay. I love those dogs. I know our listeners can't see them, but there are two super cute dogs that keep coming in and out, and it's just making this interview that much more enjoyable.
So I think that there's the one side about going one day at a time. Absolutely. One breath at a time,
sure.
One obstacle at a time, yeah. One, you know, thing at a time. And then the other thing that helped me and still helps me is that this clarity for one thing about what am I actually talking about? Like, oh, I can't be sober, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm looking at it as a beverage, or just an activity, like if hula hooping had caused me to almost be a prostitute that dies on the street, I would probably just be like, you know, other people are probably cool hula hooping, but I'm not. So hula hooping seems like an activity I'm just not going to do.
Sure.
And hula hooping culture seems a little dangerous because I might jump in a hula hoop again.
Right.
And just to detach from, there's this big cultural thing that we do. It's like drinking is this right. And yeah. Partying is a right. And it's like, well, it's actually an activity and it's right. A beverage and it's a substance. And the other thing that I would say, and what I did for myself, was that I went with my life experiences, my trauma, or if you're not coming from a really traumatized place, usually there's trauma.
Of course.
But there's the thing about, well, is it a good idea? Like, is it actually not just do I want to, or it would be fun, or maybe I could get away with it,
right.
But actually, is it something that is a good idea? Yeah. And for me, I went, well, with all the stuff I've done and all my history, I know nobody in my life that is that I respect and honor, like how their lives are, think it's actually a like good choice to go drink. And I get to decide at 22.
Yeah.
I put it years out where I just went, well, at 22, I might be at a different space in my life. Yeah. And I can reevaluate there. And what would that look like if I had a group of people that I talked to about this, and I put it way out to past 22 so that 21 wasn't going to be this like rite of passage into partyhood. Mm. The other thing though, is that when I had this wonderful woman who was like 45 years sober, who'd gotten sober really young too. She told me, she was like, you didn't get sober to like rot your ass in just meetings and counseling sessions. You got sober to have a life.
Right.
And like, why not build a life that you want to protect with every action that you ever do? And so I had this thing where she was like, dream, go figure out what you want to do. And so by the time I was getting towards 22, I had this life that was built around health and wellness and joy. And I'd learned how to, I'm like, I have way more fun than I ever did. And so I just put out that decision till later. And, you know, that really helped. And with a lot of, I worked with a lot of young people who got sober and stayed sober. Like my whole graduating class, there were five of us, and all five of us got 10 years sober.
That's amazing.
And then a few, like, three of them, I think, you know, went through a process of figuring out, well, where do they land about addiction? And they were actually ones who didn't come from intense trauma and didn't have a genetic history of substance abuse.
Right.
And they went on and went to counseling and talked with people. And now they drink like normally, or not barely, or they just don't do a recovery thing because they're like, well, I did that. But the other thing is that, like, I don't think that there's a, yes, we look at like there's a long life ahead. So for me, I had the thing where I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to have to do this recovery thing, this same recovery thing forever?
Yeah.
And I would have left if it was one thing. If it was like that, like you just do X, Y, and Z, and you go to meetings on these days and you do this thing and da, da, da. I wouldn't have been able to do it, but having it be like, well, the whole world is open to me. The spiritualities, all the self-help books in the world are there for me to be using. And so just keeping it, the woman that had the 45 years, she would always say, you stay green and growing, or you get ripe and rotten. And so
I love
that drive to just go, what am I, what's fresh? What can I do that's different? What can I, and without disparaging the stuff that had worked yesterday, because I think that's one personality thing that happens with people like me is that we go, well, this thing worked and then it stopped working, or it's not the thing that I need right now. So I'm going to move on to this thing. And then I'm going to talk shit about the last thing.
Right.
Like that doesn't have to happen. You I was deeply Buddhist for many, many years.
Yeah.
And then I went on and was like, well, I think I'm going to try on. I went to a Christian church for a long time. Yeah. I mean, I was never really Christian, but I think Jesus is fly.
And you and me both.
All the different things you can just keep trying on. I've done lots of different kinds of healing modalities and counseling and, you know, just like, you know, somebody else in my life was all, you just get fresh horses. Like, don't burn the wagon, get fresh horses, like go keep looking. And then the one other thing that I kind of, people don't really, they're like, oh, you shouldn't do that. But it has worked for young people.
Yeah.
And it definitely has worked for myself. Once I got some little chunk of sobriety, I started looking at the math, and I'm not super good with math, so I'm not going to be able to say it right here.
Sure.
But I was 15 and I was like, I'm going to be 20 with 5 years sober. Fuck yes. I'm going to be 25 with 10 years sober. Holy shit, you know? And then I'm going to be 30 with 15 years sober. I had a roller skating party called 50-50 on that date where I was both 15 years sober and 30 years old. And then I was like, holy shit, like I'm going to be 45 and 30 years sober.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, holy crap. Like if I decide to drink, then that's no longer possible.
Yeah.
And so then there's a little ego in there where I'm like, fuck yes, I'm going to be so sober. Like I'm going to be 90 years sober and telling people that like I helped God through a relapse. Like I am like going to be such a baller. And so that thing where I'm just like, ha ha, more sobriety or more sticking with it or whatever.
Yeah. I need to hang out with you more. I wish you lived closer. Cause I wasn't the person, you know, I wasn't the one that got it that first time or the second or third or fourth, you know, it's interesting. I, by the grace of whatever higher power, whatever you care to call it, I am alive because I have lost no shortage of friends to overdoses, to suicides. I have struggled with survivor's guilt as a result of that because I have hit, as I mentioned before, such rock bottoms. I mean, I've attempted suicide. I've been hooked up to, I've been intubated because I couldn't breathe on my own and they didn't know if I was going to live. And I still went back and used. So, you know, there was just that shit inside of me. And this is after years of still working on stuff like seeing therapists, going to meetings. Everyone has their process. But that's why I love hearing like you know, you got sober and you stayed sober because relapse is not a requirement. And there's a young people's meeting I go to right up the street on Tuesdays. I'm far from a young person, but I love going to that meeting because there are so many people like 25, 30 years old that have 5 or 10 years sober. And that inspires the shit out of me. You know, like I'm like, you go, you know, like that is amazing. It's encouraging to me to see that that's becoming less of a rarity. I know on the other hand, there is of course this opioid epidemic, which has been going on for far longer, as you and I both know, than the news has been covering it. But once it hit like white suburban, you know, US, then it became the epidemic. But no, it was a huge problem well before that. But so, all right, so here you are, and you know, you brought us up to speed on a big chunk of your life. And so tell me about spirituality for you. I know you talked about the healing circles and whatnot, but what is like, and you mentioned being Buddhist and loving Jesus, and I'm very much the same way. Like my bookshelves are littered with literature from all of the great wisdom traditions. I don't call myself anything, but that's pretty much the majority of what I read is, you know, the whether it's the Vedantas or the Dhammapada or whatever, I don't care, the Gnostic Gospels. I have a tattoo of Kali and Buddha and Christ and, you know, it's all love. They're all inspirational figures to me. So I dig like that. And if you want to tell me a little bit about what spirituality, and I know this is a big question, but what that is for you and how that led you into creating the Spiritual AF Instagram account.
Okay. Well, you know, when I got sober, there's a push for finding a higher power. Sure. And I was really resistant. And there was this idea of like, well, God will take care. And when you're in God's will, that means you've done good and then good stuff comes. And then coming from my childhood where I was like, I didn't do anything to deserve that. And none of my behavior set any of that stuff up. Yeah. And so I was pissed where I was like, that doesn't work for me. But I had this woman in my life who said, children experience spirit. And they usually have something that it's an experience that will lead you to whatever thought process you need to have around getting to that experience, that feeling of that connection, that bigger than you. Yeah. And I had this experience where when I was five, my mom had this boyfriend named Clutch Cargo that she'd met off the CB radio.
That is a baller ass name. Clutch Cargo. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Wow. So Clutch Cargo takes us to the Santa Cruz County Fair, yeah. And we are going to see a country show, and we're right up against the stage, and up against this chain link fence where the stairs come down, where the performers go up and down. And I'm going to backtrack here and just say, so I was five at that time, and at my grandma's trailer, there was this lacquered piece of driftwood with a clock on it and a hologram picture of Jesus. And Jesus had this wavy brown hair and these big blue eyes and this close cropped beard. And as you'd walk by, like he would raise and lower his head, like he was on the cross. Wow. Yeah. And I would stand there and just be like, rah! And then my grandma would be like, don't fuck with baby Jesus. He helps me with my word puzzles. And what she said like about Jesus was that he loved everybody and everybody loved him, that he was the Lord and Savior, and that he had suffered and died for us, or no, he had suffered for us, that and that he was God in human form.
Okay.
And so I'm 5 years old up on Clutch Cargo's shoulders with my hands in this chain link fence, and Willie Nelson comes on the stage.
Woo! Love Willie.
And he's got wavy brown hair and a close cropped beard and these big, beautiful eyes. And he's saying, I love you. And everyone's like, I love you. And he starts singing, and the guy has suffered, you know, he's like drank everybody's tears for us. Like, and I was this experience of being in the presence of the Spirit. Like I was so filled up and just open to just go, this is God in human form. Yeah. And when he came off the stage, I was just like filled up, and I just yelled, I love you. And he stopped and he reached up and he touched my hand and he said, I love you too, baby. And it was so beautiful and perfect. And when I know that it's funny to say it's Willie Nelson and all this stuff, but when I went looking for that connection, I went to that moment and I looked at it and went, if I had been so smart, I would have told myself that there was no way that this person could represent God and this experience could represent the divine because he was a high on marijuana, bankrupt country western singer. And I would have I would have stolen that experience from myself because I would have thought myself out of it.
So let me finish your sentence and then I want to say something. I want to interrupt, but.
So when I would look at how did I want to develop that feeling and that connection,
right.
I went, don't be too smart to feel the divine. Don't think my way out of it. Yes. And then I went, there was a thing about just cracking open, and I call it the williness. just to have the williness, just to be like open to go, could this be revealing what is sacred to me? And there's so much in there that I just went with that. So when I come back to trying to realign myself with what is bigger than me and my mind and my worries and my thoughts and all the storms in my life, I come back to that. How can I crack myself open to something surprising or something familiar, but that something is somehow sacred?
I absolutely love that. Thank you for sharing that. I am a huge Willie Nelson fan, Johnny Cash. I actually have a Johnny Cash tattoo. I went and visited his grave. I drove with my best friend from Connecticut out to Hendersonville, Tennessee, just to pay our respects. That's how much I love him. But you were mentioning earlier, and I don't remember if this was pre-recording or not, but how you played the kind of one-up game when you were younger. We're going to play the one-up game right now. I'm going to play that with you because I love that story. And I'm sure people listening have probably heard me share about this. I wrote about it in one of my first two books. I don't remember which. But I had a similar experience, albeit I was much older. I had already been meditating. I was very open to just the idea of, call it spirit, call it universe, whatever you care to call it. But just that interconnectedness, which, you know, is love, which is the force. If we're speaking in physics, you know, it's that mass of pure potential energy that, you know, comes together and gives form. So I was in this space of openness, and I have this website, The Indie Spiritualist, and I'm covering a Slayer concert. And I think Motorhead's playing it, and Anthrax. It's amazing. I still love all this music, still listen to it to this day. And I love sharing this story because, so there I am. It's a huge venue. I'm in the very front with the security because I have a photo pass for my website. And I'm taking pictures of, you know, the band, and they have all their amps set up in like these upside down crosses, and flames are bursting everywhere. And I'm looking around the crowd, and all of a sudden, because as I'm doing this, there's a mantra I look to work with a lot that Ram Dass teaches. It's just, you repeat it over and over. I am loving awareness. And the more you do it, at first you're doing it, but then, as he says, the mantra begins to do you. And anything that enters your field of awareness of being is essentially loving awareness, because that is the place from which you are now experiencing life. And it's a very real thing. And I say that because here I am at that Slayer concert up front, and all of a sudden I'm doing the mantra, and I have one of many just pure non-dual experiences. Chris has left the building. Mm-hmm. There is there is a body, and there is a presence that is looking through this body, but all it is love. And I remember the flames are shooting up, and I turn around and I look at thousands of metalheads just going insane, and all it was the personification of love. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences I have ever had. I did not get to touch Willie Nelson's hand, so you do still win. But, you know, Slayer and a completely non-dual experience. That, to me, is, you know, like proof positive that spirituality is accessible at all times, and it doesn't have to look or sound or smell or, you know, be a certain thing that often people are told. So just wanted to share that with mm-hmm. you. So
yeah, I had my other side of that. We're going to play this game a little bit.
Okay, let's do it.
I started meditation and then went to a show with Loving Kindness and a Soft Belly.
Yeah.
Being present, and then this, you know, it was Blast was playing.
Love Blast.
And this guy, there's like just the mosh pit's going, and I'm standing there watching it, just going open belly, love and kindness. And then this guy just is running, and then he pulls his dick out and he just starts jerking off. And the crowd like kind of stops and is all wah. And then, you know, Clifford from Blast like was like, yeah. And it was this moment of just like pure intensity and like everyone just cheering on this guy. And I see that as the same kind of experience of like, we were just present, and it was like that energy and carnality and physicality with this just love for the moment and love for what was happening.
I think that's beautiful that you could see it and experience it like that. I think Ram Dass even said, I don't remember if it's in Be Here Now or I just heard him say this in a talk or something, but you know, he used to do this thing early on where he would just sit and mirror with people. I don't know if it was when they were specifically taking acid or if it was just what the specific circumstances was. But he said something to the effect of somebody could have like taken their dick out and tried to stick it up my nose or something like that. And I apologize if I'm off to listeners. Someone will probably like get all pissed. But he said, I think there was something like that. But his point was that you get into this place of like, it's not even you anymore. It's just this loving like thing, and not to be hippie-ish, but that really like that's the experience. It's just, it's no more you and me at that point. It's just literally the dance of life, and it's flowing through this body, you know, these atoms and molecules and cells that become this organism that are just, mm-hmm. you know, that will again return to wherever the hell it's going to return to. But it's crazy, this life thing. So anyways, tell me about spiritual AF. because I want to get to these cards. I've already gone longer than I wanted to, but so tell me about the Instagram account and then we're going to have some fun. We've been having fun, but we're going to have way more fun.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good segue too from that. It's like the, how do we package spirituality? And I think that there's been this thing about spirituality is soft and it's gentle and it speaks in a yoga whisper and it wears veils and, you know, that thing. And that wasn't my experience. And I went to California Institute of Integral Studies, which I call woo woo you. Like it is the center of that stuff. And I teach at Esalen, which is like, you know, like the epicenter of woo woo ness.
I still have not been to Esalen, one of the few places. It looks beautiful though.
We're going to get you there.
It looks gorgeous.
But I also just, I always sit through all the like, the gentle talky whispery stuff or the ringing of the bells and the bowls and the, all this stuff to get to that heat of meaning.
Yeah.
And so when I was working with young people, I had to show up authentically. So I couldn't put on some front. And I don't think that everyone with that, you know, softer end of spirituality is a front. But for me, it would have been taking on an identity that wasn't clear and authentic for me. So then when I started, I left the nonprofit in order to go focus on writing. And then I had all these young people that it was a community to where people, they were like sober and going and doing their lives, but they were thought that they were going to be getting support because from this community that had given everyone before them, they'd seen support. So they were coming to me and my friend who'd been the teacher there and saying like, we really need you. And so I was like, I was burnt out. So I really had to have a way of going, okay, I'm going to show up for this and I need to have boundaries. So we started the Instagram account as just a way to just continue to go like, remember you can, you know, funny and lighthearted and deeply serious and meaningful. And remember to laugh and remember to dance and remember to do gratitude and be kind and conscious and that. And then we were called the Unicorn Maps because our unicorn was our mascot and all these people kept getting unicorn tattoos. And, and then after we'd had it for a while and we were, you know, people started following us. And then we would do something that somebody was doing tone police on and they'd be like, well, that's not very spiritual of you.
Oh, I know all about that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I would just go like, it's like this. It pisses me off so much that I'm like, don't you try to pick up me saying me being willing to say stuff matters as a fucking weapon to hurt me with and to discount it, my humanity with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my friend went back to teaching and I just was like, how do I deal with this? And so then I just was all, I'm going to name it spiritual as fuck. I'm going to wave this around in people's faces to just go, you know what? Kitten videos are spiritual. Yes. And you know, laughing about farts are spiritual and having a messy, you know, wild existence where you're not perfect is spiritual.
Yes.
And like the way that I dealt with it was just put it out there to just go, there you go. Spiritual as fuck. That's it. And then to also honor that, like, I think that there's this way that we do disparaging. We want to say bad things about stuff like technology. And so, yes, technology is having an effect on our culture. And then there's usually when I'm putting on the right glasses, I can find that there's also something coming with it that is offering a new outlet for positivity and connection. And so I know that watching stupid kitten videos has helped me through the darkest times of my life. Mm. And that for me is a hand reaching out to me, offering me solace and refuge and, you know, and a place. And so to honor meme culture, that's why when these cards came about, it was like, let's honor meme culture. Let's honor the way that positivity is being packaged in these one little pictures with like these succinct sayings. And then how do we put it in our pocket? How do we pass it physically? And so that's why when I was, the publisher came and we were talking and we came up with this idea about like, well, if I could do anything, it would be to to write self-help books that people, my people, and that I love, the like gritty, wild fuckers out there in the world, yeah, can have. And that what one thing I've been told is that, you know, I'd pitched a book before twice, and that they'd said those people don't buy self-help.
Right.
And then I was like, well, all right, maybe they'll buy these little pocket-sized cards.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the cards are incredible. So, you know, we were talking about this before we recorded, and I adore them. You and I are so similar. I can't wait, a side note, for indie spiritualists to get there, because when you get that book, you're going to understand like how much we really are on the same page. So anyways, so you put out this deck. It's not quite available yet. By the time the show airs, it will be. And it is up for pre-order on Amazon right now. Mm-hmm. If somewhere to, well, actually, I don't even ask. If you are interested, and you better be interested in these cards, or I'm going to come to your house and make you interested. you can find them on Amazon, or just scroll down. If you're on the Be Here Now website, we will have a link to the cards. I was fortunate enough, Roxanne gifted me with an advanced copy, which my fiance has kind of actually taken a hold of more than myself. Oh, and another side note, I love that the animal thing, a really quick note about that. We're similar in the spiritual thing. Like, you know, like I can be spiritual and still listen to Slayer and play in a band called Intercourse and like not give a fuck because that's spiritual to me and that's what I do. But so it's so funny that my fiance has an obsession with like animal videos, like cute little mice. We actually have two pet mice that I never thought I would fall in love with mice as pets. And we lost a mouse named Coffee a few months ago, and I cried such an ugly cry, same cry as like when I had dogs. I would have never thought, but you know, it's so funny because I'll hear these weird noises coming from a part of the apartment, and I know it's my fiance just watching these silly like animal videos, or she'll Instagram send me all these cute little hamsters and mice feet videos and shit, and I love that now. So I think that's part of why also I super dig your page, because you share stuff like that. I know that's part of why she loves it too. So thank you both for that. Now, what I want to do really quickly is, you have these two decks. They come together, correct? They're sold as or are they sold separately?
They're sold separately.
Oh, so I got a really nice duo. Okay, cool. So they're sold separately. So anyways, just buy both of them, okay? Because they are, you can't have one without the other. One is called Spiritual as Fuck, 99 Inspirational Cards for People Who Fucking Need Some Inspiration. And the other is called Grateful as Fuck, 99 Inspirational Cards for People Who Fucking Need Some Inspiration. I love these. So, you know, you have the spiritual category, grateful category. In the Grateful AF category, there's a quick like about or how to use. So I want to read that real quick, and then I want to have some fun and just randomly pick some cards, and we're gonna give listeners an example of what we've been talking about. So it says the first. This is what you wrote. The first time someone suggested I write a gratitude list, I was 25 years old, homeless.
I was actually 15. They misprinted
that's right.
That
was the misprint. You were 15. Yes. What a big misprint, too. Ugh. I'm glad we're setting the record straight here. Yes. So you were 15 years old, which is incredible. Homeless. Hopefully when the second pressing happens, because I know there will be a second pressing, they will fix that for you. So 15 years old, homeless, 7 days sober, and had just walked away from a home where I'd been abused in every possible way. When this brave person told me that if I wanted to have a good life, I'd have to find gratitude, I was so angry, I flipped over a table before I walked out. In my mind, I had nothing to be grateful for and thought the world should hand me a fuck ton of reasons to be thankful before I was ever actually going to feel, much less express, gratitude. Later that day, someone bought me a 59-cent taco from Taco Bell, and I stopped and said thank you to that person and then to the universe. Since then, I've turned toward gratitude in my darkest times and have seen my life change from inside out. When I see gratitude as a choice, I am always free to make, no matter what. I am the most powerful version of myself. That has changed everything for the better. My hope is these cards will help other wounded or just human people build up their gratitude muscles. Pick a card. Maybe it will help you find your 59-cent taco. And then it says 3 steps to grateful AF-ness. 1, pick a card each morning, 2, use the handy easel to keep it in view all day, and 3, at the very least, your friends and family will think you're deep as fuck. With love and gratitude, Roxanne. You're amazing, Roxanne. You're the best. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I've got the box of grateful and I've got the box of spiritual. I'm going to start with grateful. We're going to do this together, okay? I'm going to run my finger back and forth across the deck. You tell me when to stop, and I'll just grab whatever card I stop on. So whenever you tell me stop.
Stop.
Okay. Here's what we got. Pillows. And this is from the Grateful as Fuck. So you have on one side, the majority of the cards are like one word or a couple of words, just so our listeners know. So pillows. And then you flip it over. Go look up what ancient Egyptians put their heads on to sleep. Now go squeeze that soft, welcoming cushion you get to snooze on. You are more lucky than Egyptian pharaoh. What did Egyptians used to sleep on?
Oh my God, there are these little stands. They're like hard rock stands that you just have to, they would just stick their neck on. It was horrible.
Awful. So that is what I love, because I do this game sometimes where I will do what's called I call it the gratitude alphabet, where if I'm going to sleep or if I'm driving, I just go through A to Z and I think of literally anything I can that I am grateful for, trying not to ever repeat something. It could be a band, could be a movie, could be a person, whatever. And these cards remind me of that. So that's why I love these. Like, because people take for granted, especially in our Western culture, something like pillows. You know, the fact that I woke up today and I have food to eat, I have a shower, I have a toilet that works. I'm not rich by any means, but I have what I need. I don't take that for granted. I am so grateful. And I think it's because of some of the places that I've been and you've been that we are able to find gratitude and something that people probably do take for granted, pillows. So let's continue this game. We're going to go to the spiritual as fuck deck. And same thing, I am running my fingers back and forth and you say when to stop.
Stop.
Pulling up, make sure that I said okay. Be kind-hearted AF and full of love, but maintain boundaries like a motherfucker. Flipped over, it says, letting people fuck with you is not a spiritual attribute. Think about Archbishop Desmond Tutu. That dude wouldn't have done the good shit he did in the world if he let people walk all over him. Even His Holiness the Dalai Lama tells people to fuck off sometimes. And in parentheses, in his own compassionate AF way. How great is that? And boundaries, perfect topic, because that is something any of my listeners know I have struggled with my whole life, even to this day. People pleaser, saying no. Like, it's something I have had to very much become aware of and work on, especially these last several years with invitations to speak and then people that email and need help. And oh my gosh, it never ends. So I love it. Be kind-hearted AF and full of love, but maintain boundaries like a motherfucker. You know, how does somebody do that? And we, I mean, I can say how I think, but I want to hear from you. Like, how do we be kindful but set those boundaries, especially those of us like myself who are people pleasers?
I mean, that's a huge topic, but yes. I think that seeing it as something bigger than myself. So when I am setting boundaries, if I can back away from, yeah, but this moment, this person, I'm afraid of their reaction, I'm afraid of whatever, that if I can see it as a practice that is bigger than myself, I am able to see past whatever it is that's blocking me from doing that thing. And part of it is to have discernment about what beliefs I'm holding on to. Do I believe that if somebody's mad at me that I am automatically wrong?
Yeah.
Well, that's not quite right, you know, backing away from that and seeing the broader picture. I think the other thing that we do with boundaries, which I have a whole thing I'm writing right now about boundaries, is that if we just start looking at our actions are the boundary, we be the boundary. Don't talk about the boundary. Having somebody understand your boundary is not actually setting the boundary. The boundary is your actions. So we have this thing within, I think, counseling. People who've been to lots of counseling will go, oh, I set a boundary because I explained it forever to somebody. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that. You don't actually even have to like explain it. You can be it. So if just, you know, just saying no, or choosing not to put yourself in that position, or when somebody, if you have said it, if you have, you know, said the thing and then they do the thing, then you do something else. You don't engage anymore. And that is so, it's so powerfully altering to me in my life. When I am conscious about my actions are the actual boundary. It's not what comes out of my
I love that. And you're right. Like, we could talk about that in depth for like a whole show. So that was a wonderful, succinct. Thank you for that explanation. I know we have about 5 minutes left. Are you game to do one more card each from the decks? I think this is fun. So,
this is so fun.
I really want our listeners to get a real sense. I think they already have, but I can't tell everyone listening how much I love these cards. Like, sincerely, I'm so excited for you because these are going to sell, like, I don't know, I'm sure millions. I'm telling you, I'm putting it out there. Millions will be sold. So we're going to do the Grateful deck again. My finger is moving and you just say when to stop.
Stop.
Okay.
I want it to be Ben Franklin. I love that card.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a bonus when we can do the Ben Franklin. It's not Ben Franklin, but I'll tell you what. We'll do a bonus Ben Franklin. So this one says, I don't know. There's a number of quotation short sentences. It says, I don't know. Please help. I fucked up. I forgive you. I love you. I was wrong. The truth is, thank you. And then on the back you say, these phrases have saved so many people's lives. I mean, I think it kind of says it all, but is there anything that you wanted to add to that?
And it's that's okay my second favorite card in there. So
is
we got
it really?
It. Yeah, I really beautiful. Pushed for that one because when I was writing daily gratitude lists on, this is how this all came about.
Yeah.
And that day I was just crying, putting those things down, going, I'd pretty much done all of those. I'd said all of those recently and was like, thank you to those. And so,
I'm so glad that one came up. So, okay, we're still going to do this one more from Spiritual Deck, but really quick, I don't know where the Ben Franklin is because I have 200 cards here. Tell us about the Ben Franklin one.
Oh, you have to experience it. Ben Franklin is like my, I can't quite, without I can't reading. Hold it, but I just, it was one of those that I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I wrote that.
Damn it. And I remember reading it because I was like, huh, Ben Franklin. And I was like, didn't that dude kind of have a sordid past? But who amongst us doesn't? So anyways, but I don't remember what it said on the back. So, okay. Well, let's do a spiritual AF card. Same deal. Running my fingers. And whenever you feel like it, you tell me to stop.
You stop.
Okay.
You stop.
I stopped. And I'm pulling up a card. And it says, oh, nice. Loving is its own reward. And then on the back, the very act of loving is the benefit of the risk. We all want to be loved back. We all want to be supported. But when you grow up, you see that it has nothing to do with how the person who receives your love reacts and all about you just being willing to open your heart in this dangerous world. Be a gangster and love the fuck out of somebody today. Expect nothing in return. This is why I love these. I mean, there is something very poignant in what you said there, but you said it in a way that you're not going to hear, you know, a lot of these New York Times bestselling, quote unquote, spiritual teachers say it. And that's why, like, our tribes, these wild, crazy people can connect with this stuff. And you can open this door that they may not have otherwise been interested in had it not been presented to them. Such as you're presenting it, you know, like had I had these cards when I was like, when I was younger, I wish I had these cards when I was younger. Like I would have resonated with them being like this punk rock, fuck you kind of attitude. And I still am punk rock, fuck you. And, and again, I think that's why I love these, but,
I'm glad I found Ben. Let
awesome.
Me read it.
Please.
I'm going to toot my own horn. Okay,
yes. Well, you should own it.
Ben Franklin. What a haughty founding father. Ben invented swimming fins, lightning rods, street lamps, motherfucking bifocals. And if you ever have to get a catheter, thank Ben. Because before him, you'd have an unbendable tube shoved in there and not a nice flexible hose. Also, lending libraries and the pay it forward concept. If Ben doesn't float your boat, there's an infinite number of people in the past to choose from. So who gives you a historical boner?
And now I remember reading that because I have had the pleasure on a number of occasions of having a catheter inserted, and it sucks. Such is the glory of being an alcoholic.
It sucks less because of Ben.
So thank you, Ben Franklin. So, all right, I know we have a minute left. Our friend Roxanne is on a tight schedule. She's going to do some teaching. But Roxanne, I always like to give the last moment to my guest. Is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to share with listeners? Literally anything at all. And if not, that's cool too. But I like to leave the floor with the guest. So.
No, I'm grateful that I got to do this, that I'm the gratitude lady. Yeah, I just had a great time, and you've been, I don't know, I just want to flood you with positivity because you have been such a great role model for me and just, you know, just our budding friendship. So today was wonderful, even with all the mishaps and outages and things.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. The feeling is more than mutual. I look at you as a complete peer, and I adore the work you do. I sincerely, to all my listeners, they listen to the show because they know I don't bullshit. So when I say, please check out Roxanne's Instagram account if you're not already following it, and follow the hell out of it, because I guarantee you, you'll love it. Buy both of her decks, which are available April, what? Do you know the exact day?
March 14th.
Oh, March 14th. Oh, so by the time this airs, they will be available. Awesome. So
yeah, they're going to be in... Yeah. I just found out they're going to be in Urban Outfitters. So Yeah. So go into Urban Outfitters because they're only going to be in a couple stores in the beginning. So if people go into Urban Outfitters and ask for them.
That is ridiculous. I always go into Urban Outfitters and I'm like, I wish my book was here. And now I'm going to be like, my friend Roxanne's stuff is here. Cool.
That was my big dream. So I just found that out that they took.
Wow.
Them.
Congrats. Ah, yes. And you deserve every ounce of it. Totally perfect fit for Urban Outfitters. Yay. So psyched for you. All right. So people can find you. The best way for them to find you is at the Instagram account. Is that correct?
Yeah. Spiritual_AF on Instagram. You can always, I'm also on Facebook at Spiritual AF, or you can find, just search my name. My name's spelled funny. So it's Roxan, like a chemical, Roxan. And McDonald, like the fast food place.
Awesome. And just to note, you also will be doing some workshops coming up and all that. So everyone, please keep your eyes out for that. You'll be announcing that, I'm sure, on your social medias, correct? Cool.
Yeah.
So check out Roxanne's pages, follow her, show her all the love because she deserves it. Roxanne, thank you. This has been a blast. And I don't know. I'm literally at loss for words. Grateful as fuck. Let's leave it at that.
Yay.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Thank you so much.